Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I think I've always had the stance that, yes, I want to play here. I love the city. And it's so, I mean, the biggest thing with this whole, the trade rumors that has disappointed me is the fact that I feel like people, not everybody, but the main reasoning behind it is that let's get rid of him now because he doesn't want to be here in 2 years. He turned down this monster extension well north of $200 million. And I'm like, well, where was that? I never saw that. I mean, it's just these rumors and sources and people just saying things. And it's like, the only thing that matters is what comes from my mouth. And never once have I said I never wanted to play here.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song, he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously. His face is weather-beaten. He wears a hooded sash, with a silver hat about his head, and a bristling black mustache. He growls as he storms the country, a villain big and bold. And the trees all shake and quiver and quake as he robs them of their gold. The autumn wind is a raider, pillaging just for fun. He'll knock you round and upside down and laugh when he's conquered and won.
And the winter wind is something that our next guest with that walk-up music is avoiding. Mark Gonzalez of the Chicago Tribune joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Gonzo is in Arizona, and we resent you for that a great deal. Hi, Gonzo.
Hi, guys.
Thanks for joining us. So we heard Chris Bryant coming in, and he wonders where that $200 million, that contract offer north of $200 million was. What did you make of that specific part of Chris Bryant's session today? And overall, what did you make of what he had to say and the way he said it?
He was very pointed in his comments. You know, the $200 million figure that was shot down last year by numerous people, including myself. But I think coming out of his mouth, that made it more firm that he was fed up with what's been said or reported out there. And I think this was like a 36-minute, I'm going to set the record straight on things. He had some humor at times, joke that he threw tables after losing the grievance, which obviously he didn't do. But he was very determined to set the record straight in his eyes as to what's truth and what is manure out there.
What else did he seem upset about at the top there in terms of rumors or things that had been written and he caught wind of? What did he seem upset that had been out there and had been wrong, Gonzo?
The allegation that he didn't want to be here, that he didn't like the city, he said that's farther from the truth. I think that was one thing that he felt hurt by. The other thing was the grievance that he was very, very upset, which, you know, he understood. He even said he knew it was going to be an uphill battle. And then the little nugget at the end was just on how disturbed and angry he was over the Astros sign-stealing scandal.
Mm-hmm. We wanted to talk about that, but I want to get back to Bryant making a point to say that he got off Twitter, the worst thing to ever happen to the world, 2 years ago. Last year, he dumped his Instagram. But he mentioned that you guys, you evil media guys, that his friends would send him screenshots of whatever was written. And I'm thinking, if you're a friend of Chris Bryant, why would you send him that? He clearly doesn't want it. But I thought he showed a remarkable, the continued maturity we're used to seeing from him, and a good deal of leadership. If he was going to set the record straight, he was going to do it in one of the most mature and graceful ways I've seen a guy do that. Do you get that? Do you come across that too, Gonzo?
Yeah, I mean, he says, he doesn't hold any grudges against people, but he reiterated just how upset he was. And getting back to his friends and that stuff, I'm sure our friends wanted to reach out to you guys while you're watching your favorite teams play, and they want to talk knowing, hey, you'll be around, but they don't realize that, hey, you have other priorities at that time. So it's kind of like, hey, we're on your side, Chris. You should know about this, but he didn't want to hear that, and I'm sure that there are people even closer to him that let him know in general terms, hey, this is what's going on. Certainly he's been aware of what's been happening here throughout the winter. November of 2018 when there was first the thought of him being moved and a report that Theo was doing some background work on who might be interested in his time. And in Theo's defense, a good leader does his homework on that stuff for situations like these where the team is, up against the luxury tax threshold and definitely has some long-term needs in terms of young starting pitching. I think the one thing that gets overlooked here is that, the rotation could lose 60% of its pitchers next year. And, they're not deep in starting pitchers at the AAA level or major league ready guys like the Braves and a few other teams are. So let's not lose sight of that.
It's interesting. He still might be traded, right? Right, Gonzo? I mean, it's like, yeah. It's very rare for this stuff to happen this late, but boy, Nolan Arenado talk won't go away. Bryant talk won't go away. And they really haven't had that much time to work on it. He talked about wanting to be in the loop on that. I don't know if that's conceivable. Like, I think about Ryan Dempster being in the loop at the trade deadline. That's one thing. But keeping your superstar in the loop when he's got 2 years left to go, it's hard for me to imagine that one. But what do you think of the chances that a trade still happens between now and opening day?
I wouldn't say it's as high as it was, say in November. And I think the grievance had something to do with it, not all of it, but had something to do with it. And then you see teams that address needs, by either getting a third baseman or spending the money elsewhere and hoping they can get by, in certain ways, like the Rangers for now have done with Frazier. But who's to say they wouldn't move Frazier to first base and try to get a deal to get Brian? I know it's going to involve a lot of gymnastics to get that done, because there might not be a specific match in terms of what the Cubs would be looking for in terms of young impact starting pitching. And, another scenario, and I'm just throwing through it, maybe there's a third team involved. You saw it done earlier this month with the Dodgers, Twins and Red Sox. So a lot has to happen. I'm not as high on a trade as I once was because, we're so late. As we get closer to the opening day, that a lot has to happen, but I'm not going to rule it out. I still think there's a chance it gets traded.
Our guest is Mark Gonzalez of the Chicago Tribune, talking Cubs here on The Score. Steve Rosenblum, Matt Spiegel with you. So changing the subject for a guy whose contract will keep him here on the starting staff, is Yu Darvish healthy or not?
I think he is. I think if it was more eerie or scary or concerning, he wouldn't have been out there with the rest of his teammates. He would have been getting treatment. So it's maybe a speed bump. Maybe he was, certain pitchers have dead arm periods, sooner than others. I think it's probably just a precautionary measure at this time.
And let's go to Kyle Hendricks talking about the changes. Did that surprise you when he talked about, not that Kyle Hendricks wouldn't try to improve, but did you think that much was missing? Was it too radical? What did you make of the way Kyle Hendricks talked about the approach he was taking this offseason and into this season?
I was a little surprised, but at the same time, this organization has undergone a big overhaul in terms of its pitching and hitting development, mm-hmm. and also on the strength and conditioning side. They brought in Adam Beard over a year ago. He's got a background in rugby from Australia. He had a cup of coffee with the Cleveland Browns. It lasted maybe 2 years, but here you're starting to see his fingerprint all over what's going on. You see a lot more core work, a lot of specific training rather than the traditional methods. We'll have to see how it works, but you know, there's a few guys that bought in. I noticed a lot of the pitchers, you know, throwing the heavy balls up, you know, working on their core. And in the case of, you know, Kyle with his legs, that was kind of interesting because, you know, sometimes I get to the ballpark about 7:30 in the morning and he was out on the balcony with the yoga instructor working on that. And he still does the yoga work, but now it's more detailed in terms of his leg work and all that.
Well, you know, there's nobody who loves the mechanics and mental side of pitching more than Kyle Hendricks. And he has always, like, swallowed every bit of information that front office can give him. So if there's new stuff, I guess it's not a surprise he's taking it in.
He's first in line.
Yeah, he's number one in line. What's interesting is how comfortable he was talking about the benefits of a new voice in David Ross this week. Hendricks saying, new voice, this is good, new voice, new voice, new voice. It's, you know, I think Joe Maddon kind of stepped in it this week, didn't he? Just a little bit, Mark. When he brought it up that there were philosophical differences, he kind of forced everybody to talk about it in a new and revamped way. And people weren't afraid to say what they thought about Joe.
Exactly. And it was a little revealing how much. And I know we're only in the first week of spring training, so, you know, the champagne's not going to be on ice. But, I mean, a lot of guys have talked about the refreshing changes around here. And anybody like Joe, even Chris said he still stays in contact with Joe. But I think a lot of guys have been on board to saying where they're at in this stage of their careers in the franchise that it was time for a change. And I think the openness of the players that have come in on it is a little surprising to the extent they've talked about it, especially Kyle, who usually, you know, he could probably play for anybody. And he was pretty open about, you know, how refreshing it is to play for David and the fact that, you know, David might kick some rears a little bit. And you know, Chris said the same thing. Lester said the same thing. So, you know, winning the guys over right away is the first step.
No, because Ross is here. Kyle already knows Ross isn't going to yank him in the fifth inning of Game 7 of the World Series. But let me, you've covered any number. What is the number of managerial changes you've covered in spring training? Because I want to ask a comparative question. Do you know? Changes, did you ever count them up?
As far as, like, managers I've covered?
Yeah. How many first year, how many times do you come into spring training with a new manager? David Ross is one.
First year manager.
Okay, Joe Maddon was another. How many managerial changes?
Yeah, Dusty Baker in 93, Bob Brindley in 2001, Robin Ventura, Ricky Renteria, and then, you know, David, and you know, Joe had some experience already, but okay. A lot of first year guys I've had.
Okay. So, you talked about the fact that players are speaking more freely, or perhaps they're showing more love to this new manager. But step back and compare the first couple weeks of a spring training under all the other new managers. Does this sound the same? Is this the usual clatter, the usual noise, or is this different some way?
I think this is different, and it's different because David's not that far removed from the field. And I think on top of that, these guys have played with David. So they've been in the foxhole with him. So I think that's what separates David from the rest of them. Now we'll have to see what happens when games are played and how he orchestrates, you know, the lineup and in-game moves. I think he's going to have, you know, 8,000 people trying to help him with all the people they've added. But in the end, it's got to be David's decision, because if it's not David's decision, then the players is going to wonder who's calling the shots here.
All right, Gonzo, appreciate it. Thanks for joining us. All I can say is stay warm. Sometimes it dips to as much as 62 degrees in Arizona. I just want to make sure that you're all bundled up, you're all layered up the right way, Gonzo.
I went to an Arizona State game, baseball game last night, and I was in a long sleeve T-shirt till the fifth inning.
Oh, poor baby.
Okay, well,
that's rough.
I hope you sought hypothermia treatment. Thanks, Gonzo.
Take care, guys.
All right, it's Mark Gonzalez joining us on Score Here Saturday Suckage. So. You heard what he had to say. I will let everybody know we have a phone number, 312-644-6767. And our text zone is 67011. The text zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com.
Bryant said something this morning, and there was a long pause about something that I want to play for you a little bit later on, see what you thought about it. But some of his strongest stuff was about the Astros. And this is a really unique moment around baseball where players and managers in every camp are being asked about one team and they're ripping them to shreds, destroying them. And they're this idea that you don't badmouth each other in a sport, that is not happening right now. People are very comfortably, willingly crapping all over one franchise, and a big part of it is because their apology doesn't seem to be very forthright.
It's not. It's a dishonest apology, disingenuous, and we'll run it down. And there are a lot of people who are happy to just spray the room, and we've got some of those people who are doing it. He's Matt Spiegel. I'm Steve Rosenblum. We'll come back with that. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Well, obviously, through the whole process, there was, and then he texted me about a week ago, but there wasn't much, and I didn't take it as a bad thing or a good thing. I mean, he's got stuff he has to do. He's got to get ready for the year. He's got a busy job. So, yeah, it's kind of just like any other offseason in terms of communication. But, yeah, I mean, wasn't much. But, like I said, it wasn't a bad thing.
That was part of Chris Bryant's 36-minute session with the media today in Arizona. Welcome and welcome back. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Steve Rosenblum, Matt Spiegel with you on Saturday Suckage. And the WB Club, we have some WB Club news, Wake and Bake Club news. Later on, we're discussing Chris Bryant, and he was tied that was in reference to a question about you want to be kept in the loop. If there are trades, talks, do you want to be kept in the loop? And yeah, and also, have you talked? Were you kept up to date? Did you want to know? So really what the Cubs have done is treated him like any other player. When we trade you, you'll know. And that's all you need to know for now. Go up and hit. And that's kind of the way it is. And he seemed to accept it. That's the business we've chosen. That's the way it is.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty rare for somebody to be completely in the loop on that stuff.
Right. And they got in trouble when they let Ryan Dempster in the loop. He was overhearing conversations they were having with the Dodgers.
He was involved in the conversation.
The Cubs got roasted.
Mm-hmm. He was involved in the conversation when they traded him to the Rangers. He was there. Like, there were some speakerphone conversations, and Ryan was sitting right there. But that's a different kind of situation.
Chris Bryant also had something to say about the Astros cheating scandal. We've been wanting to get to this. spleens are built up. Bile needs to be extracted, and hot air needs to be blown away. So do we have that? We have Chris Bryant's thoughts on, he was asked near the end of this after we got done with all the Chris Bryant all the time. What do we have the Dodgers?
You've got Cody Bellinger. Yeah, this is Cody Bellinger. Yeah, but Bryant did talk a lot about it, and there's like 4 or 5 minutes of it, which are awfully strong. Bruce and I played around the top of the 10 o'clock hour, so that chunk is there. If you want to get to it at some point, Steve, it's
basically
probably worth it.
Basically, he said that the players should have been punished, absolutely, even though they were the ones who gave all the evidence. And Bryant said $5 million for a team fine is weak because it could be made up quickly through beer sales. And he thinks this sign-stealing scandal was worse than steroids. So that's that.
Mm-hmm.
Other people weighed in on it, including a member of the team that had the World Series stolen from under them, Cody Bellinger of the Dodgers.
I thought the apologies were whatever. I thought Jim Crane's was weak. I thought Manfred's punishment was weak, giving him immunity. I mean, these guys were cheating for 3 years. You know, I think what people don't realize is Altuve stole an MVP from Judge in 17. Everyone knows they stole the ring from us. I know personally I lost respect for those guys. I think I would say everyone in the show in the big leagues lost respect for those guys. I don't know what human hits a walk-off home run against Aroldis Chapman to send your team to the World Series. And one has the thought to say, don't rip my jersey off. But two, go in the tunnel, change your shirt, and then come out and do your interview. Like that makes no sense to me. It makes zero sense to me. Because I know me. Gary Sanchez said yesterday, you can rip my shirt off, my pants off. I sent my team the World Series off for Aroldis Chapman in the ninth inning at home. You can do, you know, I'm going crazy.
Cody Bellinger talking about the his anger. And there's so much anger around there, and KB was very pointed this morning. How much of it is because Bregman and Altuve came out and gave those canned apologies, Steve, and then Jim Crane even before that with the, I don't think I should be held accountable. Oh, okay.
And I don't think it impacted the World Series.
Yeah.
And then a minute later says, well, I didn't say it didn't impact the World Series.
Yes, you did.
Well, yes, you did. Yes, you're just, you're disingenuous. There's lack of contrition, a lack of remorse. It was it's a horrible look, a horrible sound. They don't care. Their problem is they got caught. That's mm-hmm. the only thing that bothers them.
I spent a lot of time listening to those on that day. A few of them did talk and take questions. Altuve was better when he was by his locker talking. Carlos Correa was really effusive, apologetic, seemingly very open as compared to a lot of the other ones, and really was a guy who seemed to understand what had happened and was ashamed of it. And I left that day thinking, man, Correa gets it at least. And it's not a guy I would have expected. I don't know, just because I've always, I just liked Springer so much as a guy, like mm-hmm. Altuve so much as a guy. But Correa was the one I left that day thinking, man, he just gets it. But then Correa today went on the record with Kenny Rosenthal in The Athletic and went really far and really hard the other direction on a couple things. He says that Altuve never cheated. He says that Altuve didn't want to hear about the trash can.
I don't believe that for a minute.
Altuve is Correa's big brother. I mean, I've talked about this a lot. Like, Altuve was the guy who, like, taped Correa's name to the locker after he had seen him in spring training and had been told, this guy's coming and soon you guys will be good. Like, 4 or 5 years ago, before the Astros got good.
Okay.
And he was like, oh, Correa's coming. That's going to be my guy. And Altuve is the guy. And Correa goes very, very hard defending Altuve, saying he never cheated. He never wanted anything to do with it. That's hard to believe. He goes hard on that. He tries to give context. Game by game, hit by hit, during the 2017 playoffs and World Series, trying to say, we won that fair and square. Correa says, we won that fair and square, and tries to give you moments that were on the road and moments when the pinch runner was somebody who hadn't been involved and moments when they were using multiple signs and all this stuff, trying to parse it, like at bat by at bat. Mm-hmm. And now at this point, Carlos, how can we believe anything that comes out of your mouth? Just because you seemed to be the most honest one the other day, you were part of the lying and the cheating for 1, 2, or 3 years. He also says that they weren't cheating in 2018 and 2019. Nobody believes that.
Not for a minute.
He says they weren't using buzzers. Sorry, but nobody believes that. He says Altuve had a half-finished tattoo on his shoulder that he didn't want the world to see. That's why
this
Altuve
just gets lamer and lamer, doesn't it?
Yeah, Correa just keeps going and going here, and I don't know. And now I'm at the point where, like, look, some of the stuff that he's saying here might be true, but now you're the cheater that cried tat, you know, or you're the whatever the hell you are. You're the liar that cried buzzer. I mean, I don't know what you are, but it's like, I can't believe anything that you've said. This is the cost of that kind of lying and cheating, is that why should I believe anything that you say at this point?
This is the famous Bob Arum quote, boxing promoter, legendary boxing promoter Bob Arum, who once stood up there, said, "Yesterday I was lying. Today I'm telling the truth." That's what he said. That's what Carlos Correa would want you to believe. Another outspoken critic, and this was before anybody could prove anything, but he spoke out before Mike Fiers. Trevor Bauer, Reds pitcher,
yeah,
then with the Indians, was talking about something's going on over there. And the Astros were mocking him. "Nothing's going on. We're just beating your butt. Nothing's going on." And he was livid about the hypocrisy, livid about their lack of character, livid about their, you know, amoral stance, which if you're stealing something, you're stealing something, and that's the way it goes. In The Athletic, he was asked, "Did it anger you more when you saw the press conference yesterday?" Which is what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
"What did you expect from them? The entire time they had been super dismissive, and it's very obvious they don't think it affected the game. They feel like they were in the right. You can tell a fake apology when you have to give an apology, but you don't want to apologize because you don't think you were wrong. You can tell what it is when you see it." And that was it. They didn't give a bleep. Of all the people I saw speak, not a single one of them actually meant what they were saying. Yeah, you have to say the words in that situation. I would rather them just come out and say, quote, "Yeah, we did it. We're not sorry about it. Yeah, we cheated. We'll take the penalty and come beat us." At least that would be honest. Just tell us how you actually feel. Don't lie. You've been lying the entire bleeping time. Now you're lying about your apology. And then he quotes Jim Crane. This is Trevor Bauer.
Yeah.
"We don't think it affected the game." You're either lying or you're a bleeping idiot. And you don't become a billionaire owner of a team by being a bleeping idiot. So you're lying. I don't know. How can you not think that affected the game when you know what pitches? That's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And Trevor Bauer angrily, and he went on about it, and he makes perfect sense. And he kind of summed up the that bile shooting up from all of us of the injustice of it all, and making the point about there are, I don't know where this lawsuit's going to go, Bolsinger's lawsuit.
It's not going to be the last one. That's for sure.
Well, now there are about, I think somebody counted up 9 players who might have a case who face the Astros, 9 pitchers who face the Astros and never got another shot in the majors. Bolsinger never got a shot in the majors after that. I think there are others, but he's the one who filed the lawsuit. And I know we should get Eldon Ham on, Scores legal expert, to see if this could actually be, could you litigate this? I mean, they're going to try. I don't know how far it would get, but I love the idea of that. I also love Michael McKeon. The magical, wondrous, multi-talented Michael McKeon, who tweeted out, "Hey, Astros, glad you're sorry. Give back the rings, then bleep off." Yes. Michael McKeon.
Seriously. I understand where he's coming from. While we're rolling here, let me reference one more player, okay? This is Kurt Suzuki, the Nationals catcher. Guy who was catching and laying down the signs in the World Series against the Astros just this past year.
When they won all 4 games on the Astros field where trash cans might have been a banging.
Well, I don't think they were using trash cans, but they were probably using some other ways because they had moved on. Remember that, and it was in the report that they had moved on in 2018. The Astros did not use the trash can banging system in 2018 because they didn't think it was effective any longer. That's what they had said. They'd gone to in-person communication and trying to get it to the runner on second, but still using Codebreaker. "Do you think the Astros were still cheating in the 2019 World Series?" Thomas Boswell, The Washington Post, asked Kurt Suzuki, the catcher, right?
Mm-hmm.
Quote, "Oh yeah, no question. We could hear it from their dugout. We heard the whistling. What are you going to do?" He said what the Nats did was change signs on every batter of the World Series, sometimes within an at-bat, when they sensed that a swing at a tough pitch was so good that the Astros' cheating might have caught up with the Nats' system. When Max Scherzer has 2 strikes on you and he throws one 98 miles per hour near your head and you smash it, come on, nobody does that.
Mm-hmm.
This is more Kurt Suzuki, the catcher laying down the signs. "We got a couple of big strikeouts when their crowd was so loud they couldn't hear. The whole thing was crazy. I got messed up on signs a couple of times, had to call time, take us out of rhythm. I kept thinking, we have to go to the field and work early on our signs in the World Series just to stop their cheating. It's so stupid and so wrong. All their players insisting today that they didn't cheat last year, they just got better at it." Suzuki said.
I'm with him.
It's the opposing catcher.
Yes, all of it makes sense to me. So we'll take a break. We'll come back with your phone calls, 312-644-6767. Also, cheating is historically been part of baseball, stealing signs and cheating. And a Hall of Famer had talked about it. It was written about. And you White Sox fans might want to listen up. So we'll do that when we come back. He's Matt Spiegel. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Welcome in, welcome back. Steve Rosenblum, Matt Spiegel with you. Saturday Suckage, top of the hour. Speaking of suckage, talk to David Schuster. We'll talk about the Bulls. Yeah, nice national representation there. We'll bring that back. We'll talk to David about All-Star festivities and dying on the hill that is Jim Boylan. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
I blew it hardcore. I've only had, what, 2.5, 3 years to plan for this weekend and All-Star festivities.
And?
I want to go tonight to the All-Star Saturday night. I wish I was going to this event.
Really?
Tonight. Absolutely.
Because you want to take Rubes?
No, I want to take my wife. Oh. I want to go and I want to be a part. Because here's the thing. Maybe every year you're that person saying, this stuff sucks. And then by the time it happens...
you almost went Pinello there.
If you're there watching, on TV, by the time it happens... Man, that looks cool. Like, the dunk contest is cool. Dunk contest is cool. And the fact that it's here, and just the volume of absurdity. Like, oh my God.
I won't deny that, but I'm not...
The personal absurdity of people who are in attendance and the uniqueness of it happening right here. I blew it. I should have done more to try and get tickets and get there. Just for tonight. Not for the game itself, but for tonight. For the ridiculousness that is tonight. And then I don't know if you've looked on the secondary market, but the ticket prices are ridiculous.
I have not looked.
Oh,
I had no intent. What are they?
My God. Well, if you want to sit close, you want to sit close tonight, you're looking at somewhere between $8,000 and $12,000.
Wait, excuse me?
Yeah. Like, you want to sit on the floor.
This is not Michael and Dominique doing the dunk contest.
It's the best they got. I mean, Zach is in the 3-point.
$12,000?
Yeah. We had a guy from SeatGeek on yesterday. He says this event is breaking All-Star game records, and All-Star Saturday night is breaking All-Star Saturday night records because the United Center is smaller than a lot of other venues. And the whole thing is Kobe infused, which is adding a level of emotional resonance to it. And Chicago, even though it's cold, is awesome. So people have been dying to come here for Chicago and planning to come here and do this in a way that they were not, say, last year for Charlotte. You know? So it's breaking records, this entire thing on the secondary market.
I had no idea. Never would have guessed that.
Yeah.
I would expect him to be a little day of event, be higher. Like, tomorrow I would have expected the All-Star game to have a more... the secondary market price of tickets go up a little bit, but what you're saying?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
It was a record. Tomorrow, the game itself has a higher average price, is what he said yesterday. We had a guy from SeatGeek on, the director of communication for SeatGeek, said higher average price for the game than for Saturday night, but the top-end tickets for tonight are going for a higher ticket. And... I only had 2 years to think about
to
it.
To practice.
Yeah. Only had 2.5 years.
To align, to get your game plan ready.
Sure. There were options. You could have, A, bought tickets. B, called everybody you know in the business and tried to line up for tickets.
Maybe if you knew somebody at the Bulls flagship station, you could have worked your way to that point.
I already tried him. Yeah. I already tried him.
I
blew it!
I didn't watch it, but I saw where... Common.
Yeah.
Now, Common and Chance the Rapper were the team captains, right?
They were
the celebrity
indeed.
Teams,
yeah.
The celebrity game last night. So Common was voted the MVP of the celebrity game. Now, I didn't watch. I caught up on this. Can you help me? Does this follow through with that? Was that the moment then when he accepted the MVP trophy that some random Reinsdorf walked out and presented Common in front of these fans, these Chicago fans, this Chicago icon presented Common in front of the greatest players in the game. They're in your city. Did some random Reinsdorf present that guy, that icon of cool and hip and au courant with an equity stake in the team?
Oh, they should have, right? Just go ahead and hand it off.
Well, I'm sure they did because they're such a brilliant organization. They're right? I'm sure they did. I'm sure they seized that opportunity. These marketing geniuses seized the opportunity to show off all of the great players in the league, show them why they should come here,
man,
to recruit the great players in the league who have refused to sign here, but then Common as MVP, and here you go, here's one of our new owners, and presented him in front of everybody, all of the great players, and all of the royalty from around the NBA that's also in town. So tell me the Bulls did that.
Yeah, they should have. I think
no, they did that, right? Because they're marketing geniuses. They're such smart businessmen. I just thought I'd bring that up.
You know, I think it's funny because locally for us, I think the big headline, the big emotional headline of this All-Star weekend,
yes,
is the disconnect between Chicago as a basketball mecca. Anthony Davis is here. Dwayne Wade is here. Common and Chance the Rapper are your MVPs. Pretty cool. Pretty high on the cultural totem pole. I have guys like that. The Jordan statue. Everything, and just all the players.
Look, Dwayne Wade's here, right?
Dwayne Wade's here.
Jordan's supposed to be here, right?
Patrick Beverly is here to compete.
Scottie Pippen's still around.
Doc Rivers is still one of the best coaches in this league. I mean, everywhere you look, all these guys with Chicago bona fides are here, and none of them have a connection to the Chicago Bulls. Derrick Rose is here. Derrick Rose is here. Gave an amazing, some amazing words at a symposium the other day at UIC, talking about mental health, opening up about PTSD in his youth that he dealt with and how it affected him for his entire life and still does. I mean, Derrick Rose is here. All these people are here, and none of them have a connection to your Chicago Bulls. That disconnect.
And that's by design. That's everybody in the NBA has a 10-foot pole.
So you,
they
yes.
all have 10-foot poles.
Uh-huh, and they're not touching the Bulls with it. All of them. And you're right. That's why, like, the moment
Obama,
or the idea.
Obama, by the way, was in the house, too.
There you go. So,
and
I mean,
Zion Williamson says that's number one or two on his list all time. So if you're talking about the impact, if you want impact free agents, so Obama was in the house. He's got nothing to do these days, right?
Yeah.
Common wins. You've got an audience there. Really? Are the Bulls that lame?
Think about that. The volume of people here, the basketballer president, you know, I mean, everybody who's here with a connection to Chicago and basketball, and none of them are connected to the Bulls, and none of them are able to be utilized as a tool to recruit stars to come here and play. None of them.
So then we hear the chants of fire Garpacks.
What a terrible job by ownership and management to have to have connections to none of that stuff. None of it.
So I wanted to, I alluded to this before we went to break, and we were talking about cheating and the Astros and baseball. Sign stealing has long been a part of baseball. Generally done, the guy on second, the runner on second base, or somebody from the bench figures it out. Joe Nosek was brilliant at it for the White Sox on the bench. And the one of the more famous sign stealing scandals before this was the New York Giants in 1951 stealing signs and coming back on the Dodgers. And then the Giants win the pennant, the Giants win the pennant, the Giants win the pennant. This goes back even further. This is from Bill Dow of the Vintage Detroit blog. It's about Hank Greenberg, former Tiger. He's a Hall of Famer. 1989 autobiography was edited by Ira Burko, and it was published 3 years after his death. And he said they were stealing signs in September of 1940, and credits that as a reason they won the pennant. And how it came about is rather unbelievable. Greenberg said the day after Tommy Bridges had pitched, the great Tiger hurler was sitting in the left field upper deck of Briggs Stadium with his hunting buddy. That alone is a story. Wow. The injured third baseman, Pinky Higgins, that was his buddy. So Bridges is holding a new rifle which he purchased. It had a telescopic lens. When he looked through it at the catcher, he could see the signs. Here's how Greenberg explained it. Quote, the next day we decided to test his ability to read the pitches, and sure enough, he sat up in the stands with Pinky. When the pitch was signaled for a fastball or a curveball, they had arranged a predetermined signal to relay it to the batter. It didn't have to go to the coaches or the bench. It went directly to the batter. This is 1940. This is Hank Greenberg and the Tigers in Briggs Stadium. Strangely enough, you could look right over the shoulder of the pitcher and look out in the stands and see the signal. Greenberg went on to explain that the team brought one of the minor league managers into Detroit, and he sat up in the upper deck with binoculars where he gave the signals. Even when the stands were full, Greenberg said the players knew exactly where he was sitting and could pick up the signs. Greenberg said the two players who refused to use the signs were Charlie Gehringer and Gerald Walker, and the two who profited most were Hank Greenberg himself and fellow home run hitter Rudy York. Quote, wrote Greenberg, I think the record will bear it out. As I remember, between the two of us, we hit one or two home runs for 17 consecutive days during the month of September. Either Rudy would hit one or I would hit one, or sometimes we would each hit two. I think it was picking up those signs that were instrumental in enabling us to win that 1940 pennant. So he's talking about really what clearly would be ruled is that's you're getting it off the field.
Mm-hmm.
That's illegal.
Beyond. That is absolutely illegal.
But listen up, White Sox fans. He used to be an executive with the White Sox, and he wrote, in 1959, when I was with the White Sox in the front office and we won the pennant in Chicago, we stole signs from the center field scoreboard, and I'm sure a lot of other ball clubs do the same. As a matter of fact, it's been rumored the Yankees were stealing signs of their center field scoreboard for years. I know they had a lot of success against Bob Feller. A lot of hitters that didn't figure to hit Feller had good records against them, and I'm sure they were helped by knowing what was being pitched to them. So your 1959 White Sox winning the pennant because guys were stealing signs from the center field scoreboard.
Well, that's what makes this moment so interesting, that you've got all these players and all these teams coming down so hard on the Astros in a culture where it has long been accepted. But the commish came out after 2017, right? Came out after 2017, after the Apple Watch stuff, and said
the technology part of it.
You can't do it. You can't do it.
Yep.
And so a lot of teams, if they were thinking it was okay, they stopped thinking it was okay, and the Astros just went right on rolling.
No, they claimed they didn't.
Yeah, bull crap. Yeah.
All right, so. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we will speak to David Schuster about this weekend All-Star events that are much too expensive for Spieggs in the city of Chicago, celebrating your wonderful 2019-2020 Bulls. Saturday suckage indeed. Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.